This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the outcome of the August 24 Angolan national elections. Hello again, I'm Carol Castillo. Oil and diamond-rich Angola, a former Portuguese colony in Southwest Africa, held its most contested election since independence in 1975. Even though the National Electoral Commission declared that MPLA, the Portuguese acronym for the People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, won the election with 51% of the votes cast, extending its 47-year rule of the country, Opposition UNITA, the National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, balked. Reuters cites a UNITA statement saying, quote, UNITA reiterates that it will not recognize the results announced by the National Electoral Commission until the complaints already in its possession are resolved, unquote. Nonetheless, UNITA appears to have garnered its best ever result, coming in second with 44% of the votes, doubling its presence in the legislature to 90 seats. In contrast, according to Reuters, the ruling MPLA lost the two-thirds majority it needs to pass major bills, although it won a majority with 124 of the National Assembly's 220 seats. Current President João Lourenço of MPLA welcomed the preliminary official results, which give him a second five-year term. UNITA opposition leader Adalberto Costa Jr. has officially challenged the results in the nation's constitutional court, alleging fraud in the vote count process. According to Reuters, fewer than half of Angola's registered voters turned out for the August 24 election. Analysts say that it was the nation's most closely fought election yet, with unprecedented gains for UNITA. Many Angolan youth are fed up with the lack of progress and economic reforms by the ruling MPLA, promised by João Lourenço. Despite being Africa's second largest oil producer, the majority of Angola's 35 million people remain in poverty, according to the United Nations. Tellingly, it was UNITA who won the majority of the votes in the capital, Luanda. So what's at stake in Angola, and why does it matter, not only for Southern Africa, but also for the future of democracy in the continent? For more on the implications of Angola's elections, we turn to two distinguished Angola watchers. Marissa Moorman is professor of African Cultural Studies at the University of Wisconsin. She is widely recognized as a leader in Angolan studies, Southern African history, and African media studies. And Alex Vines, longtime director of the Africa program at Chatham House, a prominent London-based think tank. In full disclosure, I have personally known Alex for more than 30 years when I used to travel frequently to the Southern African region and to Angola in particular. And both guests join me via Zoom, Alex Vines from his office in London and Marissa Moorman from the University of Wisconsin. Bem-vindo, Alex.
Thank you very much. Obrigado.
And a hearty welcome, bem-vindo, as we say in Portuguese, to you as well, Marissa Moorman.
Obrigada. Thank you so much.
Well, let's start with Alex. Alex, you know, very basic question. You are just back from Mozambique, another interesting country. But we are talking about Angola. So let me ask you what your take is on the outcome of the elections, which UNITA is still contesting. Give us your take.
It's an earthquake result for the ruling party, MPLA. As you said, they've been in power as the government of Angola since 1975, and they've never had such a close result since multi-party elections have been held in Angola, which was in 1992. I was there, actually, myself, helping to prepare for those elections. And so it's a shock for the governing party. And UNITA, as you've said, has done surprisingly well. It's got 90 seats. It's got almost 44% of the vote. That means a lot more deputies in the National Assembly than it did last time. The last election had 51. It's now got 90. And there's also lots of resources that are coming into the party also. There's allowances and other things. So the question now, I think, will be, how's the MPLA going to govern Angola with having a situation where it's lost its absolute majority and UNITA is very well resourced? And the population of Angola has shown that it is increasingly circumspect about the MPLA. One of the things that was very striking in the election result is that UNITA won the majority vote in Luanda, but also in Zaire province and also in Cabinda province. So three places have shifted to UNITA majority. Cabinda was no surprise to me, and it was probably forecast that Luanda might go that way. but Zaire province, nobody really expected. The other thing that has happened, which hasn't been widely reported in the media, is that there was a third party, Casa CE, quite small, but it's lost the vote completely. And that vote has shifted to UNITA. And so it won't have any seats in the National Assembly now. And that's a surprise, too, because it did have a charismatic leader, Abel Chivukuvuku, who has played an important role in opposition politics over recent years, but may now become more marginalized by being outside the parliamentary process because his party hasn't secured any seats.
Was Abel Chivukuvuku, wasn't he part of UNITA, Alex?
Oh, he's a very prominent member, and then he split with UNITA. And then he aligned actually with a split within the MPLA. And for a while, there was an idea that he might be a kind of spearhead for a third force, but that hasn't happened. And it's very noticeable that he's one of the most vocal people at the moment complaining about the election results, because obviously it's existential for him. No assembly seat means no revenue and no allowances. And so what happens to him? We're going to have to watch over the next few weeks, but he is particularly vocal currently at contesting this result.
Well, thank you for that. Now I'd like to turn to Marissa Moorman. Marissa, you've been watching and chronicling Angola for many years. What would you like to add or subtract from what Alex told us? And as he said, UNITA has done very well. It was a shock, perhaps, to MPLA, but short of an outright victory, and they are still contesting the results.
I think Alex's analysis is really wonderful. I would just highlight something that Angolan sociologist at the University of Agostinho Neto, Gilson Lazaro, said to me, which is that there are two results. There are the results of the National Electoral Commission, and then there are the results of the street. And I think that what we've seen here is a kind of a huge win, essentially, not just for UNITA or the opposition more broadly, because I think this really is about the opposition more broadly and not just UNITA, but for Angolans in general. A lot of media attention has justifiably been given to the kind of mobilization of youth, and a huge part, what is it, I think 60% of Angola's population is under the age of 30, and they've been very active and very mobilized. But I think it's also important to see that longtime Angolan political figures have been super engaged and involved and in conversation with those young people. And that has created a very viable and vibrant opposition. So leaders, not just Abel Chivukuvuku and Adalberto Costa Jr., but people like Filomeno Vieira Lopes and the other people in Bloco Democrático, as well as other figures who have emerged in Angolan civil society, Luati Berao, and the organization MUDE, Movimento Cívico, Civic Movement, that has done a lot of its own independent monitoring of the elections. So I think these are really incredibly important changes. What we're seeing in a lot of the contestation beyond the official contestation by contenders, by UNITA and Casa CE, both of whom have filed concerns with the CNE and with the Constitutional Court, is that public opinion has said there's not enough transparency. The Syndicate of Angolan Journalists made a statement saying, yes, elections were free and they were peaceful, and that's a huge achievement, but they have not been transparent and fair. And I think what I've seen is a tremendous amount of clarity and a tremendous amount of pressure around questions of transparency. Who controls the National Electoral Commission? Who controls the media? A lot of journalists have focused on the ways in which the media continues to be controlled by and dominated by the ruling party. And I think just the amount of attention on this is going to be really important for people being able as well to educate themselves about what is a democratic system and how does a democratic system work.
Terrific feedback, Marissa. Let me turn again to Alex Bynes. Alex, you mentioned that you were in Angola in 1992 for that election. And, you know, we know that that resulted in tremendous violence. I'd like to ask you then, with regard to this question of transparency, were there any international observers at this election? Because we talk about transparency and we want to know, you know, how much credence to give UNITA and the other opposition members for their claims of potential election fraud. Give us your take.
All that way back in 1992, I was part of UNIVEM2. That was the UN operation. And part of its mandate was to prepare the elections. That was my job. And I prepared them in Melange province, which is to the north of Angola. And it was an amazing experience. But you're right, the international monitoring observing of these elections that just happened in August was limited. So what you did have was the African Union, the Southern African Development Community, which is the regional body. So the African Union is the continental body. You had the Association of Former Portuguese Colonies, the CPLP, it includes Equatorial Guinea now. So they sent observer groups and they all basically said that the elections were basically free and fair, although there were issues around the dominance of state media and access to it and so on. So the consensual position of the international observers was basically free and fair. But you then need to look at the observers that the government didn't invite. And so, for example, the European Union, which historically will have much larger, more intrusive monitoring, wasn't invited to Angola to provide anything but a small technical mission, and so was unable to make an opinion on whether these elections were free and fair. I think personally that the contestation at the moment from the UNITA people that I'm talking to is about a number of extra seats for UNITA. If you look at the fine detail, UNITA is not really saying that they won the election, but they are saying that there are anomalies and inconsistencies. And so I think that's where the issue is at the moment. I suspect this will, in the end, there'll be a declaration by the Constitutional Court and we'll move on for the very reason that UNITA's done very well compared with its previous position, and that the focus will move to that Angola should have local elections within the next couple of years. It's something that the president has promised. There have never in Angolan history been local elections. It's way over time that they happen to kind of strengthen local level democracy rather than just at the national level. And if the government tries to backtrack, then I think what Marissa is saying, the power of local population, the street population, will be really felt because there is an increasing push for more political accountability at all levels. So I think this is where the debate is going to move quite quickly to.
Marissa Moorman, what is your take with regard to how much credence we should give to UNITA and others for their claims of voter irregularities? And how do you think that's going to pan out?
I think the claims are well-founded. As I said, the MUDE civic movement had its own election monitoring. UNITA folks were also at polling stations recording, you know, what was happening. And the civic movement attempted to get people to vote and then to stay at their polling place or to return to their polling place and wait until the final tallies from those particular polling stations were posted. And one of the claims is that in many of the polling stations, they did not publicly post those final tallies for those particular local polling stations and that they went directly to the CNE and hadn't been publicly, locally proclaimed. I think it's important because it's getting people engaged in the process so that there's local monitoring. There's not just the sense that there need to be international monitors. And I think it's showing us that people are taking recourse to local laws, Angolan laws, and the judicial system and judicial process. And that in itself is very, very important. I've heard people say, you know, Angolans, we alone can resolve the situation. Right? UNITA and the Patriotic Front, with which it's been working, have been careful to refer their complaints through the judicial process. I'm sure they've been under some pressure to organize protests and things like that, but I think they've been very careful to use the laws and to use the judicial process in order to contest the process. And as Alex pointed out, I mean, I think it's important for them to think about also what's going to happen. They've more than doubled their number of seats in parliament. That alone is going to require a big ramping up for them because they're so dependent on state money to be able to do these sorts of things. And it's also going to put pressure on them in terms of creating capacity, right? Local elections will be incredibly important both for representation and for creating capacity at various places around the country for people to move into both local and national level politics. And one of the problems is that things have been so centralized and so top down for so long that most people don't have an experience of that. There's no way for them to get training. People who are interested in politics or who are political commentators sometimes may find themselves now suddenly going to parliament, but have little experience to back themselves up. So there's a need for a lot of training and capacity building to happen. And I think local elections and this massive mobilization are all going to help make that happen.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Joining me via Zoom are Marissa Moorman, professor of African Cultural Studies at the University of Wisconsin, from whom you just heard, and Alex Vines, director of the Africa Program at Chatham House, a London-based think tank. We are assessing the results and implications of Angola's recent general elections. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on our website at voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel and connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, here's a shout out to a new Facebook follower, Sadiq Michelle Kashi, also known as Yemi Osibanjo from Maiduguri, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment or two on our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. Well, back to our discussion. So much more to talk about. Alex Vines, let's turn now to going forward. How João Lourenço, what are his biggest challenges now? And you and I well know, as all Angola watchers, this is a country that, you know, was part of the Cold War rivalry with the then USSR backing, of course, MPLA and the United States backing UNITA, the Civil War. But even after the war was over, Alex, some of us questioned, you know, MPLA's governance, an oil and diamond rich country. And still there's so much poverty. So with the extra pressure by the populace showing that they will not continue to abide this so-called top-down governance by MPLA, and not that UNITA, you know, are angels, but that they're looking for accountability. So tell me, how do you think João Lourenço is going to govern? What are his biggest challenges economically and politically?
Well, you're right to mention the war, because the civil war ended 20 years ago this year. And so it looms still large over Angola in terms of a reference point. And the MPLA, as you refer, has struggled to provide service delivery and provide economic equitable growth. So elite growth has happened, and the economy has been very reliant on extraction, particularly oil money, a bit of diamonds. And João Lourenço, when he became president of Angola in 2017, inherited an economy in crisis that was in recession. And my view is that during his first term, he did put together a good economic team, but he had inherited a terrible hand from the Dos Santos era. You'd had one president, the former president, José Eduardo dos Santos, who died this year, that had been in power from the late 70s until 2017. Angolans had not known anybody else as their leader. And basically, the kitchen larder was empty. There were no resources. And so the economy needed to be rebuilt. There needed to be a strategy to combat corruption. And João Lourenço, for the first few years of his first term, was in a honeymoon period with great excitement. And international investors, new ones, did come into Angola. The international financial institutions, in fact, told him to slow down on some of the reforms that he was doing because of the social impact. And unfortunately, in 2020, he also then encountered the impact of COVID. So not only did he have the inheritance of the Dos Santos period to deal with and to try and reform the MPLA, but he also then had the COVID impact on the country. And so only at the end of last year, beginning of this year, did he start to see an improvement of the economy, strengthening oil prices. And then, of course, you have had the war in Ukraine, which, yes, it's really spiked oil prices, but it's also impacted the urban poor in particular in terms of commodity prices going significantly spiking up. And in Angola, this is a situation that is really difficult when, as Marissa said, you have 60% youth unemployment. You have 73% of Angola's population under 30 years old. And so the issue for him will be jobs, jobs, jobs. How do you create employment? How do you create opportunity? And that's going to have to be the priority for the second term of the João Lourenço administration, of how to reconnect with the population and provide better service delivery and jobs and opportunities in a time frame of 5 years. My view is that a lot of the votes that we saw in Luanda in particular, and also in Zaire province, were lent votes by the population. They're not natural votes to UNITA. They're protest votes. And so the MPLA will need to now think of how it can reform and become more accountable and deliver to its populations. Otherwise, it's going to have the hard choice next time, in 5 years' time, where it could easily lose the election. It will then have to decide, does it accept election defeat Or does it go on the path of some other national liberation movement parties of government that we've seen in Southern Africa, which is systematic and quite widespread electoral fraud to claim victory? I don't think that's the case this time, but this is really a wake-up call for the government that it really needs to start delivering social goods for the broader Angolan population.
A real wake-up call for MPLA. Marissa Moorman, what would you add or subtract to what Alex said about the challenges for João Lourenço and even UNITA and the opposition? Notwithstanding the challenges posed by the war in Ukraine, the shortages of grain, COVID pandemic consequences, etc., the oil prices going down, going up now. The big question, in my view, you know, is how to diversify this very rich economy, diamonds, oil. What about agricultural? I would wonder, could this country be potentially a breadbasket and somehow compensate for whatever is being imported, whether from Ukraine or Russia? How do you see that? Do you think that MPLA is up to the task of delivering jobs?
This is certainly the great challenge that they face. Diversifying the economy being really key, right? Oil prices may be up now thanks to the war in Ukraine, but what is it, like 70% of what they produce is going to pay off debt, particularly to the Chinese. So even with more investment from countries in the European Union and from the US and other places, they're still really struggling. And the key is to diversify and to particularly develop these areas like agriculture and other things. One third of the population lives in the capital in Luanda. I completely agree with Alex that much of the vote for UNITA there is a protest vote. In general, UNITA did a good job of calling for change and say, vote for us if you want to vote for change. The economic situation is dire. When I was in Angola in both 2019 and 2020, it was clear that inflation already in 2019 was very, very high. People couldn't count on buying just basic items. Every week, the prices were going up, and that makes it very, very challenging. Even people with jobs find themselves very constrained. My best friend has a salaried job, and yet she also, you know, has a small business on the side so she can pay her kids' school fees, so she can make sure that they have all the food that they need, et cetera, et cetera. And that's very common. Even people who have jobs have side gigs. So that's going to be really important. It's clear that the MPLA absolutely has to do something, and yet they continue not to. I listened to all their campaign speeches, their campaign promotions on the radio, and all they were talking about were things that they had done in the past. There was no vision for what was coming next. Equally, I think the other parties in the time allotted to them during the campaign on the national radio station, they were much more obviously future-oriented and forward-looking. I also wanted to point out that the party started very recently by Florabella Malaquias, the Angolan Humanist Party. They actually won 1.17% of the votes, and they'll take 2 seats in parliament. That's a very, very new party. She's a very important figure. She had been in UNITA. She was a very well-known voice on UNITA's radio station. And their platform is based on access to education for all, access to jobs, access to healthcare, a very straightforward, service-oriented, basic human rights-oriented platform. And I think it's important that they'll have 2 seats in the parliament and that there's also a woman at the head of this party and a very charismatic and historically important figure as well. So the opposition faces the challenge now of having more seats, of participating in a government, of coming up with ways to challenge and to criticize and to provide oversight on new state policies. And I think, you know, we're going into what's going to be a very, very important process in that sense.
We have very few minutes left. So Alex Vines, with regard to this transparency question, freedom of the media, because we have seen so many crackdowns by the MPLA on the media, and it's going to be important for that country not just to open up more economically, diversify, but also to be more tolerant politically vis-a-vis a free press. Do you see the MPLA being able to tolerate dissent more in the open and have a greater respect for the press?
That's the main short-term question is, will the MPLA recognize that it needs to reform and reach out and be more tolerant, or will it go into a defensive huddle and try and close everything down as a response to this election result? It's too soon for us to tell which way it's going, but that is the crossroads that the MPLA finds itself after this election result, having lost its absolute majority.
Well, we will continue to follow political developments in Angola, but for now, that is all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Marissa Moorman, Professor of African Cultural Studies at the University of Wisconsin, and Alex Vines. He is the Director of the Africa Program at Chatham House. Obrigada for your excellent insights. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.